Three snowflakes have fallen in the heartland. Everybody panic! Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to a chilly afternoon and another fine episode, hopefully, of the Mopod Podcast. No, I am not panicking, although yes, there are a few snow flurries that have fallen upon the ground, and the only reason why I get nervous is because inevitably, once the winter weather hits the heartland, people do tend to lose their minds. They lose their minds when it comes to purchasing groceries. They swarm upon the supermarkets as though the great blizzard is coming and we will be locked into our homes for a month. It'll be like that episode of Little House on the Prairie, Christmas morning, where Michael Landon had to crawl out through the roof of the house and walk across 20 feet of snow to get to the barn where the Christmas presents were hidden. But really, the only thing that ever happens is that people forget themselves and drive like complete and total fracking morons. As soon as even the thinnest coat of ice falls upon the ground, everyone forgets how to drive. They think that they can still drive at 60 miles an hour and slam on their brakes to a stop, when really, so everybody slides into each other, slides into ditches, and it just gets incredibly stupid. Then, after a few weeks, everything will warm up, all the ice will melt, and then a week or two after that, the snow will fall again, and everyone will forget how to drive again, and we'll go through it all over. And really, the only reason why I'm worried about it this time around is my wife is out of town, having some family health issues, so she traveled back to her hometown area to be with her grandmother, who is ailing and is actually in surgery as we speak. So please keep a warm, kind thought in your heart for her. Which means I'm here alone with the mob, which actually is going pretty well. It's been a while since I've had to deal with the entire mob solo, and I haven't had to deal with the entire mob solo for an entire 24-hour period in a very long time. So I think I'm fair and all right. It's that time of year where I can kick back, be Mr. Mom, where I spend all of my afternoons doing laundry, reading. I should be writing right now because I haven't been writing, and I feel very guilty about that. I, of course, a month ago got ballsy, said I would do the NaNoWriMo, and very quickly, as is my fashion, within a few days, kicked it all to the curb. I got really about a fourth or a fifth of the way in, and decided I couldn't swing anymore. Had too much going on with the play coming up, and needing to learn songs for the band I joined. Just felt overwhelmed. And in fact, I still feel overwhelmed, but I do have a bit of hats off to some of my friends out there. My friend Nathan Tackett, who you should also look for on Amazon.com, the Kindle service. He's got some stuff out there. He completed a full-length novel, and he actually, keep your eyes out, in April, he announced on his Facebook page that he's hoping to get his book, The, published one way or another, as he put it. I'm very excited to read that. I've always said that Mr. Tackett is a bit more inventive and a better writer than I am. I had the distinct honor of participating in a play that he wrote back in college, a short one-act story, and magnificently written, wonderful visuals. So if you have it, if you have a mind, go check out Nathan or Nate Tackett, T-A-C-K-E-T-T. Check out his stuff. And really, anyone that takes the time commitment and the great undertaking, has the nerve to undertake the great NaNoWriMo challenge, I tip my hat off to you. And if you did finish it, well then goddamn, you're a better man or woman than I. Maybe someday, I always say that too, maybe next year I'll get it done. Next year I won't do as much stuff. I got 5 kids and 2 jobs. Yeah, there's always something going on. But I do need to be writing more, and I of course know this on a daily basis. I have not written a word basically since I shelved my NaNoWriMo project. I've glanced at my sci-fi project, which I still need a title for. I do have every hope and ambition of within the next 2 weeks now, going over that with the notes I got from my good friend Nate, expanding on some things, and hopefully having that ready to be published via the Kindle service before Christmas. So it's the 1st of December, Christmas is the 25th, a little more than 3 weeks. So probably by Christmas Day then be ready, because I'll probably wrap it up on Christmas Eve, because that's just how I roll, yo. I also felt, I often get these little reminders that I need to be writing more. Paul Ehrenberger, very good man, who I had the privilege of basically meeting through the podcast, who actually knows a friend of mine, excuse me, he happened to stop by the office this morning because he felt that he had basically his own little personal short story, at least a chapter of a short story, come to fruition and come full circle for him personally. And he was so jarred, maybe jarred's the wrong word, but he was so moved by it and struck by it that he felt the need to come drag me down to my office this morning and tell me about it. I felt bad, however, because I had to boogie. I had to go pick up my 2 youngest children from school, and which is really too bad because the conversation was going to some really neat places. Paul's had a bit of an interesting life and done a number of jobs, including he's fooled around with the creative arts. He played in bands through the 60s and 70s and 80s, owned businesses dealing with music equipment and music period. The conversation was going to some really neat places until I had to drop it abruptly to go pick up the children. And Paul, if you're listening, which I'm pretty sure you are, we need to do that again sometime. In fact, the conversation was going to such a neat place that I would love to actually continue it sometime on the podcast. So if you can hear me now and you're of a mind to do that, please drop me a line. We'll see what we can do on that. Oh, what else is going on? Oh, really? Oh, been tired. Started exercising again, which is no big deal because I go on these spurts. Every 6 weeks or so, I go on a health kick, or I decide that's it. I'm going to start eating healthy and I'm going to exercise. For the last week or so, I've been at least been doing push-ups every day. Something that I've been trying to do since someone started this movement back in July on Facebook. It was the 3,000 push-up challenge. Actually, I think it was June, where you do 100 push-ups a day, however many increments you want. So I've been trying to do that, doing a minimum of 100 push-ups a day. And then yesterday, I mixed it up. I broke out the push-up or the chin-up bar. Which is usually an embarrassing thing because I've never been able to do more than 3 or 4 chin-ups in a sitting, no matter, regardless of hand placement and what style, unless I have my feet propped up on something. But so I got ballsy and I did a bunch of pull-ups in addition to my 100 push-ups. By the way, I'm not bragging by any means. And then I decided I would try and figure out how to do the P90X. Friends of mine gave me their P90X collection. I borrowed it for a week or so, and I ripped all of it onto my computer, onto my hard drive, because then I could put it onto my portable hard drive. I could plug it into the Xbox and do the exercises with the video going on the big TV. Well, then my youngest son this summer dropped the Xbox. It's dead. I cannot use the Xbox. So I've got all these video files, and all I can do is watch them on my computer. So I spent an hour of my allotted workout time trying to figure out how to burn them onto a disc that my Blu-ray player would read. That didn't happen. So I finally gave up and said, all right, I'll just do them off the computer. Then I had to fight programs because the video wasn't syncing properly. And then I finally got around to doing about 20 minutes of the exercise workout before I finally said, screw it, I'm a fat pussy. I'm taking the damn break. I will try again and pat myself on the back for at least venturing forth and trying it. Now here's today. I had every intention of kind of doing the same thing today, that I would go to work, pick up the kids, get some laundry going, and then I would, I did my push-ups this morning. I thought, then after I do the podcast, I'll go and exercise again this afternoon. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. I did 20 minutes of the Kenpo X workout, part of the P90X system. I do not like moving my hips right now, twisting my upper torso from side to side. My forearms hurt. I'm whining. I've got a kink in my neck, and all I want to do is eat. I had a nice small lunch, and I don't care. I want more. I want to eat everything in the goddamn house. I don't care if I'm pushing 210 pounds. I want to get down to a more idyllic weight, not because I want to look it, because I feel like I'm a big fat fatty, and then I have the realization that I'm really just a big whiny woman. I'm gonna go get a snack. Yeah, I know I whine too much, but you know what? It's my podcast. I'll do what I like. You don't like it? Tune into another one. Yeah, I shouldn't let the power of a microphone and bandwidth go to my head. Offend all 12 of my listeners. Actually, I know I have more than that, because I did see the totals, and I have to say, in the short time after I put up the special episode with my lovely wife Amanda the other day, got amazing feedback on that. No actual emails or anything, but a lot of listens, a lot of downloads, a lot of embeds. It was very, very neat to see. And the look of shock and horror upon Amanda's face when I told her that was priceless. Absolutely priceless. And I hope you all enjoyed it. I had a fun time with the wife down in the office. If you would like to tell me exactly what you thought about it, you can do so. You can email me at mopod@live.com. Send me your thoughts, suggestions, even if you just want to tell me that you love me and love what I'm doing, you can do that too. I won't tell anybody. It'll be our little secret, baby. Just you and me. How you doing? I do, however, apologize for lost episodes and whatnot. For those of you that are late to the dance and have been trying to catch up on the archive, the archive is not that extensive. This is a very cheap organization. The only money I've invested into this thing would be for the microphones, including the new one that I test drove last week with Amanda. And it is actually costly to maintain a Podomatic website that will actually still hold on to all of that backlog of shows going back through April, so I have to clean up the database, so the archive gets more and more limited every week. If you would like to be able to go and view all that, well, you can help me by spending some money on books. You can go to Amazon.com and purchase Our Own Devils, which I've been reading to you. You can purchase my bar book. And hopefully, as I said, in a few weeks, my still as yet untitled sci-fi book will go up on there. And purchasing that, you know, it could help. You never know. I just got my notification. For those of you that do not follow the Facebook page, Mopod Podcast Facebook, I did get my $12.25 royalty check in the mail this week. Yeah! Rolling in it now, baby! Last year I bought a six-pack and cigars. I think this year I'm just going to blow it all on booze. All on booze. Forget about it. But also, really, if you would like to seriously buy the books, some of that money might actually help me to be able to put forward buying the bigger portable hard drive for the website. Then you can have the full breadth of the Mopod Podcast archive at your fingertips. If you have a business that you would like to advertise on the podcast, get in touch with me through mopod@live.com. I'd be happy to work something out, and any sponsorship funds would also help go towards that. It would also help towards me getting a sandwich for lunch, maybe having a cocktail. Those are always good. I'm a big fan of cocktails. I love them. Can't get enough of them. But you didn't come here to listen to me ramble about how much I like beer and bourbon. You came because you're enjoying the book, Our Own Devils. We're up to chapter 26, and you kind of get a double dose this week. Chapter 26 and 27 aren't that long, so I'm going to read chapters 26 and 27 both for you today. Once again, we are getting closer. We'll be less than 50 pages away from the finale by the time I'm done reading these today. Something to look forward to, huh, kids? I'm excited. Are you excited? Of course you're excited. That's why you're here. Therefore, I'm going to shut up and keep reading. You're fucking serious, said Trey as he rubbed his face with his hand. Aren't you? Yeah, I guess I am. We were in the kitchen at Avalon. I had snuck up on Trey as he unlocked the back door to the restaurant's kitchen. He was now trying to go through his morning checklist while I tried to convince him to aid me in my quest for the truth. Being in a business during the off hours was always a little unsettling to me, especially a busy restaurant. Every other time I'd been in there, the kitchen had been in a state of controlled chaos with flames shooting up, sous chefs and line cooks moving at a rate I could neither comprehend or ever dare to match, and waiters and waitresses moving in and out at an almost dangerous pace. But at 8 o'clock in the morning, we were the only two people in the building. The ovens and gas ranges were cold, the cash registers were empty and off, and our voices echoed in the empty space. "Explain it to me again," Trey said as he opened up a pantry with the clipboard in his hand. As I spoke, he nodded almost absently as he checked off items on his list. "I want you to call the law firm of Bargain, Peck, and Lenz in Lincoln. You'll ask to speak to Russell Applegate. Tell him you're interested in opening your own restaurant in Lincoln." "Why would I do it in Lincoln? Why wouldn't I stay in Omaha?" "Because you don't want to step on the toes of the restaurant owners in Omaha who have helped you thus far," I replied, annoyed. "So, you want to open this restaurant and..." "What kind of restaurant?" "What? What kind of eatery am I going to be opening?" "What the fuck does it matter?" "Hey, man, I'm supposed to be a young entrepreneur with a business outlook here. I'd better know all this before I start going in over my head. Is it French? Italian? Americana? It could be a fucking hot dog stand for all I care. Can we please focus here?" "Sure, Mac," Trey said with a chuckle as he went back to his inventory. I groaned and cracked my neck with a slow, deliberate turn of my head. "Anyway, you tell him you want to open a restaurant, but you don't want to go through a realtor to buy the space. You tell him that you understand he's a reliable man in the field." "How do I know that?" "Oh, Jesus Christ, Trey, can you just let me finish?" "No, I'm being serious this time, Mac. What if he asked me who recommended him?" "Honestly, I don't think that it'll come up. If you concentrate on buttering this guy up properly, he won't care if Osama bin Laden gave you his name. Or you, for that matter." "No, I'm pretty sure that would send up a red flag. But you set up an appointment, preferably for today, to meet and discuss your plans for the location and all of that crap." "What do you want me to tell him when we meet?" "Don't worry about it," I said. "You won't be there." "I won't?" "No, I can't risk going to Lincoln to see him. I just need to get him on my own turf, so to speak. Well, said Trey with a shrug and a big smile. Why the fuck not? Let's do it. We waited until after 9 o'clock for Trey to make the phone call. I had honestly expected for Trey to get stuck in a game of phone tag with Russell Applegate. After all, I didn't exactly know just how busy real lawyers were. Either Applegate wasn't that good, or his schedule that morning just wasn't very full, because Trey was connected to Applegate's office rather quickly. After a little verbal sparring with Applegate's secretary, he was on the phone with the man himself. Trey played it wonderfully. He even thought of details that we hadn't even discussed. He told Applegate that he was going to be moving to Lincoln soon to live with his fiancée. He also said that he had recently come into a nice bit of money through an inheritance, and after a few years of suffering in the back ends of kitchens, he felt ready to open his own restaurant. Applegate did indeed ask him what type of eatery he was planning to open. Trey answered him easily without skipping a beat. He even winked at me as he rattled off a diatribe of restaurant terms I didn't understand. But whatever it was that he said, it worked with Applegate. The only detail I had been at all worried about was the meeting place. Applegate had agreed to meet in Omaha to accommodate Trey's busy schedule. They both agreed that to meet at Avalon would be somewhat disrespectful to Trey's current employer. But at the same time, Trey didn't want to have to hold their meeting in his home. That was my idea. I didn't want to pull Trey in any deeper than I really had to. At my insistence, Trey suggested having their meeting at a Ramada Inn on South 72nd Street, not too far off of the interstate, so that it would be more convenient for Applegate. When Applegate questioned Trey about not having the meeting at his home, Trey explained that his house was being fumigated and that he was currently staying at his fiancée's house. Applegate waffled on the point quietly for a little while, which had both Trey and myself panicking a little. Finally, the thought of a commission check and billable hours must have appealed to Applegate's more basic instincts, and he agreed. The meeting would take place at 4:30 that afternoon. "I really appreciate your working around my schedule," said Trey into the phone, holding the handset in just a way that I could hear Applegate over the receiver. "Oh, it's no problem at all, Mr. Daniels." He was probably estimating the bill in his head as he spoke. "You're the one who will be paying me, so it's the least I can do." He laughed heartily, as though to say, "Just give me my money and I'll go anywhere." They broke the call, and Trey hung up the phone with a content grin on his face. "How was that?" "Laurence Olivier would be proud." "I could kick Olivier's ass, only because he got about 100 pounds on him." I left Trey to his morning checklist and went back to my car. The dashboard clock read 9:30. I had 7 hours before showtime. I drove back to my apartment and fired up my computer and logged onto the internet. After a few minutes of skimming over search results from Google, I jotted down a name and called the Lincoln Repertory Theater. On the second ring, a young woman's voice answered.
"Thank you for calling the Lincoln Repertory Theater. Our upcoming show is The Tempest. How may I help you?"
"I'd like to speak to Ruth McCollum in the costume department, please."
"And who may I say is calling?"
I was ready for this. "My name is Chuck. I'm with the Lim Light Costumes out of Chicago."
"Just a moment, Chuck, and I'll see if she's in,"
the cute little voice said before putting me on hold. I was spared the watered-down hell of Muzak, but there was nothing else in its place. I hated being on hold with nothing being played over the line even worse. It made me think I'd been hung up on. I hadn't been. After a few moments, there was a click, followed by another woman's voice.
"This is Ruth McCollum."
Ruth was sounding particularly bored. "It's Malcolm Connolly, Ruth." I waited. She said nothing. "I got the package, Ruth. Why didn't you say anything to me about it?" There was more silence for a moment.
"I don't know. Why didn't you ask me about it?"
"Because I didn't check my mail for almost a week. I just found it last night."
"If you have it, then what's the problem?"
"There is no problem. I'm just really bothered that you didn't say anything about it."
"Why?" "Because I didn't trust you."
"What about what you wrote in the note? That Alex told you I could be trusted?" I could hear Ruth breathing audibly over the line.
"Alex and I talked about you a lot. She made you sound like a gun-toting alcoholic with a lot of guilt issues. She trusted you. I do not."
With that, she hung up. I won't lie. I was a little hurt by Ruth's comment. I thought about calling her back and explaining to her how noble and righteous I was, and that I was demonstrating it by trying to find out who had killed Alex. Fortunately for me, I didn't need Ruth McCollum to argue those points with me. I already spent a lot of free time arguing those finer points with myself. Still, I preferred people thinking I was a pretty good guy, even if I knew that I wasn't. Maybe I could have Trey and Mike write up letters of referral to send to her just to say what a great guy I was. Nah, probably wouldn't be worth the effort. I was glancing at pictures of young women of questionable moral fiber and various degrees of undress when someone knocked at my door. I'd finally gotten into the habit of locking my apartment after having been jumped in my own home a couple of times. I grabbed Deshaun's Glock from my waistband and walked to the door. Mike was on the other side, flipping me the bird when I looked through the peephole. I unlocked the door and let him in as I stuffed the pistol back in my pants.
Damn, Mac! You finally started locking your door! I'm almost proud of you.
Almost?
Yeah, well,
he said as he walked into my kitchen to help himself to the meager contents of my fridge.
Jesus Christ, how in the hell do you survive here when everything in your fridge is turning green?
Some of that's supposed to be green. You know, I was just thinking about you, Mike.
That's a little scary,
he said as you walked into my living room empty-handed, having given up on eating.
Especially if you were holding that piece while you were doing it.
Yeah, well, I said with an embarrassed shrug.
Mac, I hate to preach, but where did you get the piece?
To Sean.
The boyfriend?
I nodded.
Damn, he must trust you.
I don't think he does, actually. Since we've met, I've smacked him around, shoved a gun in his face, gotten him fired from his job, and tossed some of his pot out of the window of my car.
Jesus! It's amazing he hasn't beat your ass up yet.
He did mention that it's still a possibility for later on. What brings you by?
A couple of things. I checked out that Steven Sinovec for you. You said that he works first shift at the Kawasaki plant over there in Lincoln, right?
I nodded.
Yeah, that's not quite accurate, he said as he pulled a notebook out of his back pocket and flipped it open. From what I found out, talking to various people, he took an incredibly early semi-retirement and is collecting partial benefits.
Well, he can't be that old. How did he manage that?
Sinovec is 40 years old, he read from his notepad. He started working at the plant when he was 20. About 5 years ago, after he'd become the head of maintenance, he suddenly stopped coming in full-time. After a while, the semi-retirement came up. One of the terms of it is that he shows up about once a week or so and checks over everything in the building to make sure everything's running right.
That sounds like a sweet deal. How did he pull that off? Why does his wife think he's at the plant all day?
Because she lied to you,
Mike said with a look that told me he thought I was a gullible fool, which I probably was. Sucker for a pretty face and all that.
When he was about 30, Sinovec got in the numbers game.
Oh, really?
Yes, really. It sounds like he started out as a leg breaker for Sammy Sinclair in the late 90s, collecting on debts and whatnot. Then, when Sinclair retired in 02, he handed his numbers bracket over to Sinovec. There's nothing definitive, but there are suspicions that he's broadened his enterprise over into loan sharking and the protection rackets as well. Rumor has it that he acquired his semi-retirement plan from the plant as repayment on a bookie debt that couldn't be repaid. All told, he doesn't seem like a very nice guy.
I guess not.
Does that help you out at all?
Maybe. At the very least, it adds possible ways of connecting Vic to other people.
Vic? This guy's Vic? The guy that Alex was worried about? That guy she was having problems with?
Yeah. I went and visited the owner of that car lot the Pontiac came from. I kept nagging him about the car and leaning on him a little. When he left, I followed him to Russell Applegate's house.
My, how the plot do thicken. So you're assuming that the car guy owned a debt to Vic or something?
Yeah, and there's another thing. I walked into my office and returned with the tape recorder. I pressed play and set the device on the coffee table. We were both silent as the recording of Applegate's message played, with Mike staring intently at the recorder while I stared out my sliding glass door.
Jesus, said Mike as he snapped the player off when it was done. Yeah. Where in the hell did you get that, Mac?
Someone sent me Alex's answering machine.
It's Applegate?
I nodded.
I can't believe you haven't gone there and killed him yet.
Oh, believe me, it crossed my mind, I said as I lit a cigarette and continued staring out my window.
Mac, I talked to Trey, Mike said gently. I know about the meeting.
So?
Call it off. Especially now that you've got this. It's time to call the Lincoln cops and let them handle it.
No.
Mac, it's time. It's gone too far. Right now you're so damn close your objectivity is completely gone. Although it's not like there was a whole lot of it there to begin with. If you go down there, there's no telling what you might do. It's time to let go.
If all you're going to do, Mike, is sit here and preach and try to be my conscience, then you'd better just leave now and not waste your time. I'm not going there to be judge, jury, and executioner.
I know you're not, said Mike as he stood and walked up beside me. But what if you get what you want? What happens if Applegate cracks and tells you that he killed Alex? What then? It won't be an admissible confession, and he'll know that. He can accuse you of harassment or intimidation or worse. Then he'll be gone. And what if you realize all of that and suddenly decide that you're facing the only chance Alex has for justice?
My teeth were clenched tightly and my eyes were shut to keep the tears back. My cigarette was burning away, forgotten in my right hand that was pressed up against the glass in a fist, a long column of ash slowly working its way down to the cigarette filter. Then I did something that neither Mike nor I had expected. It was a deep-seated emotional howl that made my entire body shudder. I slammed my fist against a glass door and pressed my face against it as the dam broke, and all the emotions I'd been trying to hold back for days ran rampant through me. I doubled over and fell to my knees and cried for a while. Mike did nothing. He kept his distance and waited until I was through. It took a while.
Well, kids, that does it for today's reading. That was, once again, chapters 26 and 27 of Our Own Devils. And as always, if you cannot wait to find out what happens next, please rush on over to Amazon.com and purchase Our Own Devils for reading through the Kindle application, which is available for your laptop, your Apple computer, your Apple music device, assuming it has 3G capability or Wi-Fi. You can also get it on your portable phone, your smartphone, that is. If not, the actual Kindle. If you have an actual Kindle, you can purchase my books and read them. Once again, like us at Mopod Podcast on the Facebook. Email me if you have thoughts, suggestions, if you just want to gush. That's mopod@live.com. Yeah. I got a lot of laundry.